Today is Sunday, March 1st, 2015, and I'm very happy to be back in class, and I was very moved by all the emails and calls that came in. Where was I? So just let me explain what happened. Baruch Hashem, we're alive and well. What happened was simply a triple play. As you know, I had the colonoscopy scheduled for last Thursday. You don't get that overnight. It was 6 weeks earlier that I got the date. Maybe even more than 6 weeks. And lo and behold, on that Thursday is the Brit of a great-grandson. So originally, the Brit was scheduled for 3:30 in the afternoon. Then they moved it to 4 to accommodate me. I should be able to do both. I didn't want to be, Sunday because after a colonoscopy, you are a little weak and they warn you you can't drive for 10 hours, etc. Anyway, to make a long story short, on Wednesday morning, Yomo, who has many abilities, including reading satellite reports, told me that the snow is real, it's going to be big, and then it's going to clean up right away. But it's going to knock Thursday, Friday out. They announced they're closing the roads. The Brit was then scheduled for 8:30 in the morning. I try to rearrange my colonoscopy, and they give me a date in June. Well, I was caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Then my grandson went to work, and I guess he speaks Hebrew with an Israeli accent, and he wouldn't take no for an answer. To make a long story short, he pulled off a tremendous miracle that the colonoscopy was rescheduled for Monday morning, and the chitchayvut, everything done by the phone, by computer. I couldn't believe it. And the problem with a colonoscopy is, so Thursday I was Sunday. The Brit was fine. We got back to Yerushalayim before the snow. The problem with a colonoscopy is you have to prep up. Those of you, when you turn 50, you'll know what I'm talking about. The preparation is worse than the actual colonoscopy. So I had a knockout Sunday and Monday. I had great nachat Monday morning. I'm waiting there with my eldest daughter. Took me to Bikur Cholim. And we got there early, 7:45, the office opens, and the secretary walks in, looks at us, and says, "Oh, ata betach harav, mazel tov, sayah hanin shelcha, ken hayit sandek." I couldn't believe it. She knew I was due. Then she opens her computer, and the first thing she says, "Noah, the hitchayvut from the kupar is in the computer." So I was a very happy man. Then the doctor walked in and gave me a big hug and a big mazel tov, and then they went to work, and thank God, the Rebbe is alive and kicking. The Eibishter should help. 120, I got enough shurim for 240, but that's a different story. Okay, so that's the story, and I thank all those who asked where I was. Thank God I'm in good health, and there's nothing to worry about. And the Eibishter should just give us bracha v'hatzlacha, v'kein holler, and only good news for the Torah people. Now, last week we saw, very interestingly, or 2 weeks ago, the email that came in from Erica or Eti Steinmetz. Very, very fascinating how a poor Rabbi Mandel, who wrote such a fascinating volume, over 120 reasons why we need an Erev, and his thinking is very innovative. And if you have Hungarian blood in you, Adam, you can't argue with him, because the Chatam Sofer's Tshuva is even more striking and more stronger than Rabbi Mandel. But the Chatam Sofer is like the Rush. If you don't agree, you're an Epicurus, plain and simple. So it's sad to see that here's a Rav in Flatbush, and anyone who wants to be Machmir, and nevertheless, what the man has gone through and is suffering until today. And this is part of our generation, where we put stress on externals, but where inside we lack so much learning, so much knowledge, so much ibige gebenkeit, so much yirat shemayim. It's like very easy to be a good Jew today. And min shemayim, we had a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That movie from Fox movie that was revealed about the Chofetz Chaim, it's just overwhelming. I'm not the same person I was before I saw that movie. And if you see the movie, you see the Chafetz Chaim stepping out of the 19th century, his simplicity, that was the Chafetz Chaim. You see the way he's dressed, you see the way others are dressed, and oy, halavai, halavai, we can go back and live and be like the Chafetz Chaim. I came out of it smelling like a rose, because no one in the world can ever tell me off now that I'm not wearing a proper rabbinic garb, because as I've said all along, I have two answers. One answer is very simple and very deep. What is more important, Sahal or the Mossad? Well, anyone who has an IQ above 80 will say we need both of them. You're correct. Tell me, does Sahal wear a uniform? Absolutely. Does the Mossad wear a uniform? Absolutely not. So you need both role models. That's one answer. But another answer that simply complements it is I always tell people I dress like Reb Chaim Brisker and like the Chafetz Chaim. And while I don't have a video of Reb Chaim Brisker, all I can do is quote my Rebbe, and I don't have time now to tell you the story in Boston when they came to the Rav and told him he's wearing a caps and it's not Mechubadik, it's the chief rabbi of Boston. And he told them he dresses the way his grandfather dresses and to go fly a kite, essentially. But it's Chafetz Chaim now. I have living, tangible proof the way he dressed. So Baruch Hashem, we had a Gilui Eliyahu, I call it. I had Yomo work together with our Sherry, and we printed up pictures suitable for framing. If anyone wants them, I'll give them out at the end of the show. Now, we also saw our good friend Rabbi Asher Weiss once again, and he deals with the Erev in, first of all, he explains again, because he's Mekel, because he accepts the Erev, because he accepts, when I say accept the Erev, I mean accept Surat HaPetach, that's what I'm referring to, and that he accepts Surat HaPetach in a big city, for all the reasons we've studied for the last 2 years. And he's also, people attacking him, and he, Baruch Hashem, he has a strong backbone. No one frightens him. So and he defends himself, and he explains that there's so many sheep, that there's so many viewpoints that he puts together, he has a right to be Mekil. And then he goes into the Erev in Ramat. What's fascinating about the Erev in Ramat is that for the first time he talks about a military blockade. And you have that in Ramat, you have that on the way to Efrat, on the way to the Gush. I need not tell you that the military blockades are a part of our life in the state of Israel. And he reaches the conclusion that when you have a military blockade, you know, and that the Omeid is Yoter Meruba Al HaParutz, and they can stop any car, then you have a what might even be a mechitza, but certainly is a tzurat hapetach. And that military blockade in Ramat, where you come on to 443, certainly helps in putting up an Erev. It's an Erev Haredi, it's not the Erev of the city, the Erev of the city encloses it, but it's an Erev of the I imagine it's Agudat Yisrael, I don't believe the Eidah Haredit, or it could be the Eidah Haredit in Ramat already, putting up that Erev, and Rav Asher Weiss is machzirit. On one side you have the blockade, on the other side the road is closed in by Shmuel HaNavi, you have endless buildings, and once again, Omeid Meruba Al HaParetz. All right, now, we're going to go to Australia. And say a few words about Australia first, because Australia's in the news and it'll tie in with tomorrow's share. And I have to tell you that my heart is very heavy with what's happened there. And the newspapers already, it's not just the websites, but the newspapers have picked it up and it's become a cause célèbre. And you have to understand, Australia was down under, it was the end of the world. People ran away to Australia, saving their lives from World War II. Chabad got to Australia in the 1920s already, one of the key families, it's a famous Israeli a politician, a Torah politician, Feiglin, if you've heard the name, you don't know the name Feiglin, he left the Likud now, he's founding another party, he's involved with a student of mine, Seth Sackett. I have a dear student who's very active with Haver Knesset Feiglin, who's a member of the Knesset yet, or at least if he didn't resign, I don't know. But the real Yiddishkeit in Australia comes about after World War II, when, and we'll talk about this tomorrow in more detail because the person involved plays a role in the Shia, when Rabbi Yitzchak David, Itchid David Grona, is sent by the previous Rebbe, then the seventh Rebbe, as a Shaluach to Australia. And he was a rare combination of learning and Hasidus and insight, and being a Brooklyn kid, he adjusted very nicely to Australia, and he built Australia. Now, they're in the news, and I just want to spend 1 minute on it, and I want to make something clear. Times have changed. I'll tell you one incident that happened with me, and you should understand what I'm saying. When I started teaching women in the year, I started teaching women in 71. Until 71, I only taught men. 71, I started teaching men and women, and for 31 years, I continued teaching women. In Machon Gold was quite an institution then. Michola was first getting started, the foreign students program. Machon Gold had a large foreign students program and had very fine women, both from the continent and from the United States, even from South America. Very fine program. Now, at that point, most of the women were older. These weren't kids coming after high school, first experiencing freedom away from high school. These were ladies who were either in the middle of college or finished with college, and they were older. And one member of the faculty, and I obviously don't want to mention his name, a YU graduate, or one of these people who became right-wing and made believe they never breathed the air of YU. So there was a lady, a student of mine, a student of his, and he said something to her, and I never even knew exactly what he said. I never wanted to know it. It hurts me just to talk about this, because a rub, if you're a rub, you have to be tzanua, you have to be an example of Yiret Shemayim. How can you make a sexual remark to a student? All right, that happened in Mechwala too. Tragic, tragic. But this happened many, many years ago. Now, this, watch what I'm saying. This lady confided in me. And I would meet with her in the teacher's room, and I helped her. I helped her immensely, because if you're a young lady of face 19, 20, and a rabbi makes a terrible sexual remark to you with terrible, terrible inferences, it can shatter you completely, totally. And I was very helpful. And it's now so many decades later, generations later, she is still makir tova to what I did for her in the early 70s. The family just made a big donation in my honor to help Russian Jewry, to shvut ami. So that's hakaret hatov. But look, you heard the story, Sam. What's lacking in the story? Did I go to the police? Did I go to the dean? If this would happen today, I would have gone to the dean. I would have said, it's either get rid of that animal or I'm resigning, I'm leaving. It's either him or me. We didn't think like that. In the early 70s, no one thought like that. You know, you helped the girl, you solved the problem, the guy's a manuvel, all right. I had a run-in with him in Michala, I can't even repeat it. I couldn't believe the way this man's mind works and what he said in public. Okay, today, if this would happen, I would go to the dean immediately and raise my voice and make an issue out of it. So I want to say with Australia, you have to understand that when this topic first broke more than 20 years ago, more than a generation ago, the attitude was to handle it within. Today we know that's a very bad approach. Rabbis are not equipped for this. We don't have training for this. If chas v'chalila a person gets caught up with a pedophile or with a sex maniac or with a deviant, immediately you have to go to the authorities in the school and they have to contact the police. This is criminal activity in the full sense of the word. So I just want to be melamed zchut because right now Australia is getting a lot of bad publicity. And I feel bad because I know many of the players involved. I know them personally. And some of them are dead already. And you have to understand, you can't judge a person 20, 30 years ago with the standards of today. Why you included? Why you had two terrible questions that came up on the horizon? And it's very hard to judge why you, they did wrong, they just kicked the people out, they let them go. I did my own investigation. I don't want to talk publicly, I've reached certain conclusions. But certainly in one case, that rabbi was absolutely guilty of what he was charged with. So again, you'll ask the question. The Rav threw him out. The Rav said, you're out, period. The Rav threw him out? Why didn't the Rav go to the police? Why didn't he tell Rabbi Lamb, go to the police? But it was a different era. Today we're much wiser. And if you know what's going on in Australia, I'm very proud to say that Rabbi Moshe Gutnick of Sydney, who spoke so beautifully about absolutely going to the police, rabbis are not trained for this. I know him very well. I had Sudat Shabbat in his house. Someday I'll tell you the whole story. It's fascinating. It's not for now. But ani melamed zchut. So if I'm quoting Australia and quoting certain names, bear with me. And if you read Yediot and Mariv and the websites and what's going on now, and I'm sure it'll be picked up by the Jerusalem Post, just understand you have to take the negative and look at it 30 years ago, like we look at the Chafetz Chaim. Don't try to put it into the context of what we know we have to do today. 30 years ago, we thought it was an isolated incident that we could be smart enough to handle. And good Jews, you see, when a person says he's doing tshuva, a good Jew wants to believe him. Today we know that in these areas, it's very hard to do tshuva. When you have a sexual deviant trait in you, it's there. It's not going to go away unless you work on it very hard. And God have mercy how many lives a person can destroy if we don't get rid of him and report him and fence him in immediately when it comes to our attention. Okay, now, with that being said, I have a copy for you, by the way. So we spoke last week about the Erev in Melbourne, about the whole machloket, and this beautiful pamphlet, the Erev in Melbourne Halakhic Analysis, and all the sources there, back and forth, forth and back, what we can do, what we can't do, the shitat, but remember, all over the world, Eruvin are being built. And I've said this before, I say it again, and you'll see that I'm absolutely right. Even the Eda Haredit had to bend when it came to potato chips on Pesach. Do you understand what I'm saying, Sam? Not exactly. Menachem will explain it to you. Originally, the Eder Haredir had a rule that they don't give a Hechsher on Pesach for anything that has more than four ingredients. And Isaac, they don't give a Hechsher on Pesach for anything that their forebears didn't eat. So then the Israeli economy expanded the food. I mean, you don't start to comprehend what food was like here in 69, what ice cream tasted like. Today, you're talking Israel is on the forefront of food technology in the entire world. all the products made here. You walk into Pomegranate in Flatbush. Sam, you don't know what that is, but you got to be a very wealthy man to walk into Pomegranate. It's owned by Sapa Hasidim. And believe me, when they walk into the bank, the director or the manager stands up for them, not for their learning, but for their dollars that they control. And all the Israeli products are available there in the finest supermarkets. The wines, all right. So they started making potato chips. When we came in Aliyah, who saw a potato chip here? Yeah, America, we had wise potato chips. But Israel, then they started making. Then Pesach came, and they're making potato chips. No, the Cheder Haredit refused to give Hashgacha. Hashgacha around potato chips all year, not for Pesach. Our grandparents didn't eat potato chips on Pesach. No, a kid remains a kid. He sees his friend down the block having potato chips. 90% of the kids from the Eid al-Haredit threw temper tantrums till their parents let them buy with the Hashgach of the Rabbanut. Oy vey! Hashgach of the Rabbanut? Today you can't get a potato chip in Israel on Pesach that doesn't have the Hashgach of the Eid al-Haredit. You see, the Arab is exactly the same thing as a potato chip. People travel, people go, like good. Reb Moshe is opposed to an Arab, but in Detroit, he let them have an Arab. In Kew Gardens Fields, he let them have an Arab. In Muncie, he let them have an Arab. A Jew is traveling from Melbourne, from Sydney. He sees their Arabian all over the United States. Their Arabian, thank God, all over Israel. Their Arabian in South Africa, the easiest place to build an Arab, obviously. They mamish have walls all over the place. And he wants an Arab in Australia. Now, here's where the problem began. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the dominant figure on the Australian religious scene. There is no question that Mizrahi and anything to the right of Mizrahi, everyone coalesced around Lubavitch. The Gutnik family, their entire families of endless Rabbanim, all Lubavitch. There were Rabbanim yet in Australia, Talmidim of the Chafetz Chaim, Litvisha, Ungarische, but the heart of the community was Lubavitch. The Yeshiva College, the bookstores, the groceries, the shuls, the arrangements with the police. Australia's where Melbourne is one of the few places in the world where the lights, you have to press to turn a light on to cross the street, to turn on the Ramzah, the traffic light. Before Shabbos, before Yontif, the entire Caulfield area is switched to automatic by the police. You follow? The state spends more money, because when it's automatic, we're white and it's changing whether you need it or don't need it. It obviously costs more money to run. But they do it because there's so many Orthodox Jews. Lubavitch has influence. Why can't you build an Erev? Now, the Rebbe took a very negative position, but a very interesting position. And let me explain. The Rebbe was a Lamdan Mufak. When it comes to Hasidic Rebbeim, you can argue from today to tomorrow who was a Lamdan, who wasn't a Lamdan. Those of you who heard my lectures, how many years, 15, 20 years ago, on the history of Hasidus. So, you know, the Pelish Hasidim put a great stress on learning. Other you take the Gerer Rebbe, you take the Sfatemet, the second Gerer Rebbe, take the first Gerer Rebbe, you follow me, Rafi? Take Rav Avram Yitzchak, the first Gerer Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter, Rav Yitzchak Meir Rottenberg, Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter. They were Lamdanim of Hakim, the third Gerer, Rav Avram Mordechai. These were people who knew Kol HaTorah Kula, but their other Rebbeim with Tzaddikim, their learning was not what Hasidim went to them for. Hasidim went to them because they were tzaddikim, yesodei olam. I told you the story. I'll tell the story again in context because you have to understand what I'm coming to with the Rebbe. They tell a story that from the Rushna dynasty, one of the Rushna, it could have been the Sadigera Rebbe, met a big Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. And the Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva said to the Rebbe, he said, "I don't understand. You have so many Hasidim, thousands of people are waiting outside just to look at you. And you barely know how to learn. I can put you in my back pocket and learning. And no one looks at me." So the Rebbe says to the Rosh Yeshiva, he says, "Of course I can read people's minds. And the Litvisha is hysterical. You can read people's minds? Big deal. Read my mind. Let's see what I'm thinking." And the Rebbe says, "You're now thinking Malal kol aretz kavodo. The world is filled with God's glory." And Rosh Yeshiva, "I'm absolutely not thinking that." And the Rebbe says, "That's exactly the difference. I think that all the time. And you just admitted you're absolutely not thinking that." So you see, people went to a Rebbe, not necessarily that they were gedolei Yisrael in learning. It's not a litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. But there was tzidkut, there was chassidus. When you come to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was a gon adir. He knew kol ha-Torah kula. I can testify. I saw it with my own eyes. The Rav spoke about it. The man could quote every Tosfos in Shas without holding a Gemara in front of him, word by word, let alone Shas per se, let alone the Rambam, let alone the Tanya. Whatever he touched, the Rav said about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, "I never met anyone with such a fundamental memory, a photographic memory. Everything." It's like Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef looked at a sefer when he was 12 years old, and 80 years later, he was able to quote word by word what he saw in the sefer. These are special minds. So when it comes to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's not that Rakefet is going to give a shiur and say, "I'm going to explain to the Rebbe why you can build an Erev." The Rebbe knew backwards and forwards and knew why you can build an Erev, and he knew the Chatam Seif, and he knew the Rush, he knew all the Shittat Rishonim, and he knew the Chazon Ish, and he knew Reb Meisha, and he knew Reb Aaron Kotler. But the Rebbe was very chashish, and the heart of today's shiur will be this, devoted to these chashashot, and you have to understand them in context. It was a different world when what we're talking about. The 70s, the 80s, a different world. It's not yet the world today, with at least throughout the world, there are every bit of 3 million Shomer Shabbos Jews, if not more. The state of Israel alone, you have 2 million. It's not a world like in Israel today where so many people are studying Torah, learning Torah. So many people should know something. I don't say everyone's a Gadol Hadar, but the masses should know basic elementary learning, etc. So the Rebbe was chayshish that if we build an Erev, people will never know that it's forbidden to carry on Shabbat. And it wasn't only the Rebbe that felt this way. I'll give you sources as I go through and go further. It is reported that the Rav felt this way as well. We're living in a world, after all, learning, it's after Hitler, it's after desolation, remember, what are we, 60 years after Ben-Gurion would boast that in another 20 years there won't be a religious Jew left. We've spoken about that in this class, the other class, can't repeat myself now. But do you understand? And BG was right. Logically speaking, if someone would say to you when you entered the Israeli army in the 70s that 40, 50 years from now, there's a good chance that there'll be 5, 6 major generals with kippah on their heads, you would laugh. Impossible. Major general. Rav on a loof. Who's a major general if he's wearing a kippah? He's the Rav HaRashi. A regular general? What are you talking about? Read Barak. There's a biography done of Ehud Barak, who's the most highly decorated soldier in the history of Israel. read where that, what that man comes from. I mean, he has tremendous yichud, bark. He comes from Gedole Yisrael. But his mother was a rabbi's daughter, if you know that expression. I told you, when after the Yom Kippur War, when that leftist kibbutz, they voted that anyone who wants to put a mezuzah upside their door, the kibbutz will pay for it. Two families refused to put up a mezuzah. One of them was his mother, the Rav Satachta. He had tremendous yichud, the Bach family. If you know Nevadik, you know what I'm talking about. But you read the way he grew up in the army, and they would have a feast once a year. Everything at the feast was stolen. Nothing there was something they bought or requested. They stole from generals. They stole from other. What are you teaching your soldiers? What are you teaching your pkudim? What is the message? Read the book. I met people whose parents served on the barrack, and these kids would tell me, yeah, my father used to tell me, we stole this, we stole that. They took bottles of wine out of the kitchen. There was no end to what they were capable of doing. So, to this generation, you're going to permit carrying on Shabbos? No kid will know that Shabbat you cannot carry. And it's not only the Lubavitcher Rebbe who held this. You'll see, I'll give you other sources from England, I'll give you another source claiming the Rav said this as well, and there certainly is something to it. When my grandchildren travel out of the country, the first thing I tell them, two questions you have to ask wherever you will be. One, if there's an Erev for Shabbos, and two, how the hot water is produced on Shabbat. If it's not a Dechemish, and generally outside of Israel it isn't, there's no hetman in the world to use hot water on Shabbat. If it's a Dechemish, all right, then we can get involved in a whole question, halacha l'maisa, whether you can use it. It's not for now. Certainly Friday night, it's not that you certainly can use it. By day, it's a machlokes ha'poskim, but some very great poskim say you can use the hot water. But you need a Dechemish. It has to be heated by the sun, not heated by fire. Okay? Machlokes HaPoskim. You're all familiar with it. That's the difference between the first edition of Shmiat Shabbos Kehilchata to the second edition. But I can tell you, people spoke with Rav Neuwirth privately, and he told them he never changed his mind, that he was just afraid. Again, the pressure of the Litvashi Yeshivas. So that's the first chashash that the Lubavitcher Rebbe came up with. Then there was a second chashash. And here's let me come back to the first chashash for a minute. Noah, you can refute that chashash very simply today, but it's today that you can refute it. When time clocks first came out, there was a tremendous machloket whether you can use them. And one of the problems involved, because we paskin ain't shvitat kelim, right or wrong, why can't you use a time clock? But again, the same story. People will think you're turning lights on and off. People will see a house. 4 o'clock Shabbos afternoon, the lights went on in my house. 1 o'clock Shabbos afternoon, the lights had gone off in my house. People will think you're machalel Shabbos. All right. Nowadays, no one will raise that issue with time clocks, because everyone knows that we have time clocks. Every place you go in Israel, every electric store, you have so many different variations of time clocks. There's one I was plugged in back. I don't know if it's still there. I saw it there for over a year. So everyone knows there's a time clock. With an Erev, obviously, the refutation of the Rebbe's point of view is very simple. In Europe, there were Erev, and everyone knew there was an Erev. In Israel, there's an Erev. You have to educate, okay? But certainly in the 80s, the 90s, that was a very valid point. It wasn't as good today as far as Torah learning goes. Okay, that was one problem. Then the Rebbe raised another problem. And when I'm quoting the Rebbe, it's not the Rebbe wasn't the only one, but I'm quoting the Rebbe because when it came to Australia, he was basically the Posek Achron, even though he wasn't a Posek, he was a Rebbe, and you will know that whenever anyone came to him from a Shaila, he sent you to one of the Chabad Poskim, Rabbi Pekarsky. There were others, there were Gedolei, Gedolei Israel, Rabbi Plushkin, there were Poskim in Chabad, but the Rebbe didn't Paskin. But the Rebbe, ultimately, on a question like Eidov, he was the Rebbe. So he raised another issue. You build an Eruv. No Eruv is strong enough to withstand wear and tear. No Eruv is strong enough to withstand hurricanes, storms. You're always going to have a problem. Maybe the Eruv will fall down and people will not know. And this is a serious question. This question just came up last Shabbos, in my building. It seems that Hanov, they sent around from one of the big Lumi Dati Lumi shuls an email that there's a question about the Eruv. All I can tell you is I heard absolutely nothing about the Eruv, but the minute I heard that, I went online. I've already become like your generation. You don't do anything. You go online. I went online, Eruv Yerushalayim, and I got a phone number to call. I called the phone number. Phone number is out of service. Leave it. It's unbelievable. I dialed again. Maybe I'm dialing the wrong number. Vami Rafik, I'm dialing the wrong number. I dialed again. Phone number out of service. Anyway, halacha lemaisa, everyone carried in my neighborhood. Everyone said no such thing. The Eruv's not down. And the greatest proof to me that the Eruv was not down was that 20 years ago, when it did happen occasionally, when the Eruv was much more primitive and they didn't build it with the good wire they use today, if the Eruv went down because of a storm, there would be an announcement on the radio. And I purposely heard the news at 4 and again at 5, even though Malka had lit candles already, like a week ago, not the Shabbos candlelighting was 5, but a week earlier it was 5 to 5. But the man is not makabel Shabbos until later, so I purposely heard the radio, not one word that the Eruv was down. But you see, it is a real problem. Is the Eruv up? Isn't the Eruv up? What is happening? And he brings this up, page 33, and here's the quote. Indeed, quoting in the name of Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yehuda Silva writes, and the footnote in an article in the Jewish press dated January 29th, 1988, page 38a, quote in the name of the Rav, aside from the technical reasons, the Rav has rather pedagogical reason to advise against citywide Eruvin. The Rav said he is against such Eruvin because of his fear of raising a generation of children who will grow up not knowing of the Issa of carrying on Shabbos. And quote, end quote, this is the Rav. Now, right away, when you quote, you know who?
Jewish press.
I'm not quoting from the press. I'm quoting the footnote here. Jewish press dated January 29th, 1988, page 38A. Now, I have to tell you, who is Yehuda Silva? Yehuda Silva is Jeffrey Silva. Jeffrey Silva was a controversial figure in the yeshiva. I think I mentioned him in the Monday class that he was Mr. Norman B. Abrams' nephew. And Zichrono Levracha, Jeffrey Silva, he never married. There's no child alive, no continuity. And he became what they say in popular language, I'll use the word, he was considered an extremist in the yeshiva. He was one who led the battle that I spoke about in the Monday class in 1970, when the yeshiva was recharted and Reitz became, what's it called, auxiliary. What's the word they use for it? It's an adjunct. What's the word they use? What?
Affiliate.
Affiliate of Yeshiva University. This was for federal and state reasons to avoid problems of having to accept any person, man, woman, child, regardless of ethnic and racial, religious origins, etc. So the yeshiva became an affiliate, and it avoided those problems, and why you could accept money from the government and pledge they would live up to governmental standards. Jeffrey Sula was one of those who led the battle against Rabbi Belkin and got the Rav to use a good Chinese word, upgehitz. Yitzchak, how would you translate that into English?
Riled up.
He got the Rav riled up. And the Rav battled with Rabbi Belkin. So Jeffrey Silver at one point became persona non grata. I told you, the yeshiva, I don't know if there's anyone else in the history of YU where they issued a chayrim, he could not come into the Beis Medrash. And the only one who would befriend him was the saintly Rabbaron Soloveitchik. See, that was Rabbaron's personality. You follow me, Isaac? He could not go along with a chayrim against a student, freedom of conscience, freedom of mind, freedom of discussion, freedom of opinion. It's not Russia. This is not Putin. And what's his name? Nemrov, whatever the name is. Imagine blown away outside the Kremlin walls yesterday on Shabbat. It's beyond comprehension. But listen, with what's going on in the world today, with people being beheaded left and right, nothing should surprise us. So, Jeffrey Silva, the question is, did the Rav really say this? Can we depend upon this testimony? And here I have to tell you, my gut reaction, yes, I would believe the Rav would think this way. It is possible he thought this way. My proof? No, who can bring me a proof? Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz, the Rav of Elizabeth. What happened in Elizabeth? You got to remember Rav Teitz too. Anyone here who knows the Teitz family of Elizabeth, you know what I'm talking about. Rav Pinchas Mordechai, but you didn't know him. Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. No, I think it's Rav Pinchas Mordechai.
Mordechai Pinchas.
All right, we'll accept you knew him personally. I knew him personally. So when he finally allowed an Erev in Elizabeth. One Shabbat a year, no one was allowed to carry. You had to know that there was a prohibition against carrying. Okay, so you see, this is a real dilemma. All right? It's a dilemma. I'm not questioning, but you see, I have a different view. Who am I? But I have a different viewpoint. I can explain. But what's important is to understand. You're dealing here with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You're dealing here with the Rav. You're dealing here with giants. And this is a real dilemma. A kid grows up. How does he know carrying his asa? You know, the average kid. Take the average kid. The average kid goes to cheder, goes to a mamlachti dati school system. Not every kid is cut out to learn. It's one of the most important messages of your parents, and I was talking about this with Moshe this morning. Right or wrong, we were talking about children and parents. Parents have to learn, and it's hard for parents because you think you can machen a stempel auf the kind. You can put a seal on your child to be totally in your image. And it isn't that way. A child has to have freedom of expression. You have to inspire the child. You have to give the child boundaries. But a child has to have freedom of expression. And that's extremely important. Not every kid is allowed in. I have many Karen Hara, many grandchildren. And there are differences between them in learning. Baruch Hashem, the Yeret Shemayim is solid. So they're kids who will understand carrying Abba Rishiyot B'Shabbat, the poor man handling to the rich man, the rich man. You know, I'm talking about the Mishnah in Shabbat. Today there are 1,001 variations of the Mishnah in Shabbos with all types of pictures. Rakefet was, if you recall, when I was Messiah Meiruvin, what was it, last year or 2 years, I don't forget already. So I remember I told you it's the third time I've learned the Riven from cover to cover, and it's the first time I understood every word in a Riven. No, how to understand every word, Sam? Very simple. Because now I have a picture book done with computerized diagrams. You can understand everything in a Reuven. No, there's some kids, they don't learn. They're from, they're good kids. Everyone carries on Shabbos. He's not a big London about an Erev, about the Chazon Eish Shita, about the Meisha Shita. So, this is a real fear. Okay. The Lubavitcher Rebbe then came up with a very unique suggestion. You can call it genius or you can call it naive. Very simple. I'm quoting, and I'll show you sources where you see it in writing. The Lubavitcher Rebbe Shlita suggested a novel solution. Granted that the construction of an Erev is of great benefit to those Jews who do not carry, there would be no prohibition of secretly constructing an Erev without any publicity, and certainly without a public relations committee. All those who did violate the Shabbos and organ transgression, and no obstacles of temptation will have been placed in the paths of those who did not carry. My dear students, this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe's response to Melbourne. I'll quote his exact words in a second, but just think what this proposal is. Clandestinely, secretly, enigmatically, esoterically, get the Rabbanim together, build an Erev L'Mahadrin, do an Erev Chatzedot for all of Melbourne. Don't tell anyone. And look what you've accomplished. Those who carry no longer have an Issa. And those who don't want to be Samach on the Erev, they don't even know there's an Erev. Do it secretly. No, does anyone think you could put up an Erev secretly?
No.
Just think for 1 minute. Refine Shavalim. Can anyone, everything we do, do I have to tell you what goes on in our little world? Coney Island Bakery. Brooklyn Bakery. Manny's just went into the liquor business, in the store. He's selling liquor now, the franchise. Who has secrets? Nowadays, with the internet, what goes on in the Gerer Rebbe's house? I told you, Chaim Shulson puts on his website how many candles the Gerer Rebbetzin lit that Friday. No, Kirby, Lamay Nafkamina, how many she lit? Because when the Rebbetzin is at home, she likes for every child. When she's traveling, she likes too. No, the Rebbe has two homes. He has a home in Bnei Brak and a home in Yerushalayim, which is the real home. Chaim Shulzan had a tremendous scoop. That Friday, she lit all the candles for all the children in Yerushalayim. Bye-bye to Bnei Brak. Got it? Where's your home, Florida or New York? Lamaynaf Kamina? Believe me, no. What's the big deal? But Shulson has someone within care, feeds him information, must pay them off. Bells. He can tell you exactly how many hours late the bells of Rebbe came to a Brit last Thursday. Rakefet was there 8:15. 8:35, he was already sitting holding the baby. Everyone was rushing, worried stiff about the snow. The bells are Rebbe. Rafi announced the Brit for 9:00 in the morning, being a Belz Chassid, he invited the Rebbe. I hate to tell you, the Brit took place after the Litvisha sunset. Get it? But this is the world in which we live today. You're going to put up an Erev and not tell anyone. But that's a different story. You don't have to be a Belzer Chassid Yitzchak. It's okay. But the Chassidim, yeah, it's an amazing thing. I hold it up. And to forget about the Chassidim, Poseya al Rosh Hayam Kodesh, the Gemara in Bracha. It's a lot worse. Ribbono Shel Olam, Gedolei Yisrael, used to sneak in through the side so people shouldn't stand up for them. You follow? And here, could you imagine a Chatan Siddur Kedushin, a Brit, a Pidgin Haben, what goes on when people are late? What can I tell you?
I've seen. Also, the Bados of the Mall, you probably had other things scheduled.
Well, the Bells of Mall, what the Rebbe tells him, his whole Panosser is when the Rebbe Sandek, he's the Mohel. That's not a problem here. But this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe. To see, B'mokam, what do we say Saturday night in America where they say all the psukim, what we don't, that's why they're so wealthy in America. They say all the beautiful psukim of bracha, here we don't say it. B'mokam gadluto, sham anvinutato, am I quoting it right, Yomo? Smashmasha hukazah. And here's the gonadir, here's the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and it's so sweet what he says. Put it up secretly. Don't tell anyone. Now, here's the actual letter. In back of the booklet, here's the actual letter. Mufusemet atisha v'doreinu ze isho iragun shemishkashvim ito. Ha'oseh Erev v'yodeya she'sof sof yitparsem ha'davar ha'reze takala iyuma ki yi'efshah shelo yera shabbat kodesh echad for ha'erev pasul v'al pi teva she'itraglu pamim achadim b'hotzla'ah b'shabbat kodesh Lotayil kol hachraza v'chodaa sha'erev nifsal v'asur v'chulu sheyapsiku lahotzi. He's saying human nature. I felt that way last Friday. My daughter calls me. They sent her around. I say, wait a minute. Don't spread rumors. A year ago, rumors spread. The Erev was down. Until today, we have never been able to confirm whether the Erev was down. They checked with Katzenellenbogen and the Erev was up. So why the rumors? My gut reaction was it's a rumor. Then I tried to call. Then I listened to the news. Then I concluded the Erev has to be up or they would have announced it. But the Rebbe is right, you see. That's on human nature. You every Shabbat you carry, Mapitom, this Shabbat, all right, there was a snow, all right, but they had snow last year, we had snow 4 years ago. They know how to put up an Erev. The Ein, and the Rebbe says, the Ein la'asot Erev, ela besodiyut. So this is some psak of the Rebbe. I'm going to come to England in a moment. Because it's exactly the thinking of the Rebbe.
Did this influence London?
Yeah, this falls out in London as well. Okay, I don't want to leave Melbourne. Let me just finish off with Melbourne. Now, what's very interesting was that there is an Erev Kashela Mahadrin in Melbourne. The great Rav of Chabad, Reb Yitzchak David Grona, and please understand he was a great individual. It breaks my heart what happened today and all the bad publicity he's getting, and you have to comprehend that times were different then. It was a different world, a different concept of what one could do, what one couldn't do. Times were different then. But he was a great individual. He was very close to the Rebbe. not only very close, he was related to the Rebbe. He was a cousin. And he had a tremendous problem. If the Rebbe said not to build an Eruv, he could not build an Eruv. If the Rebbe said build it secretly, he had to build it secretly. What did he do? As far as we know, there was no Eruv. But there's a larger community in Melbourne. There's the Mizrahi element. There's the Hungarian element. And they put up an Eruv. And the community was split. And time marches on. And Lubavitchers travel all over the world, and wherever they go, there's an Eruv. So it's very fascinating. This is an email from Yitz Gold, who's in Brooklyn today, I gather, learning in Chabad, and he knows many of my Talmidim, Aryeh Liebman, Chesky Edelman, Chabadnikim as well, and he lived in Melbourne, he studied in Melbourne. And let me just give you one word of introduction. When I was in Melbourne, a guest of the community, there was a kollel there, don't know if it still exists today, supported entirely by Chaim Gutnick, one of the Gutnick brothers, but the one who did very well financially. Right, his first name is Chaim, I had it correct, yeah, okay. Moshe I spoke about before. Moshe lives in Sydney. Chaim at the time lived in Melbourne. His wife had been my student, Sterner. Lovely, lovely individual, Sterner knew, now Gutnick. And he had a kollel of the best students from the Chabad Torah scene all over the world. The Rosh Kollel, I believe he was an Englishman, Rabbi Feitel Levin, or Levin, L-E-V-I-N. I was very impressed. A Lamdan Mufak, mamish, a pleasure to talk with him. Totally conversant with the Achronim, back and forth of Lamdan by every sense of the word. Nothing to do with Chabad. In Lakewood, in YU, in Merkaz Arav, he would be a London Mufak. I was very impressed. So watch what happens. A couple of points regarding the Eruv of Melbourne. Although the Rebbe was indeed against Chabad as an institution, against the Eruv, it should be, was indeed against Chabad as an institution. It means that Chabad as an institution was indeed against the Eruv. Via Rabbi Groner, as I told you, Rabbi Groner couldn't go against his cousin, couldn't go against the Rebbe. They could not build the Eruv. However, an Eruv was built. And the fact is that the Eruv of Melbourne was indeed rebuilt by Rabbi Feitel Levin, a Chabadnik who at one point was the Rav HaMachshir of the Mizrahi community. I say rebuilt because when he was hired and reviewed the status of the Eruv at the time, he found many halachic issues and passed it, but was told that he cannot passel it and leave it be. He must rebuild it properly, which he did. I know this because I was his Talmud at the time at Machon L'Simcha under Rabbi Gutnick. Once it was built under his direction, many of the community used it when needed. And you see, what happened here was that this Chabad Rosh Kollel, Lamdan Mufak, the Eruv was there. People are depending on it. Life is marching on. You can't stop human progress. There's an Erev in every city in Israel. There's practically an Erev, I would say, in every city in the United States, which has over 20 Shemesh Shabbos families in it. Well, if you looked at the Erev, you probably found problems with the Surat HaPetach in certain areas. They told him you can't leave it that way. He was forced to rebuild it properly. Once he rebuilt it, Chabotnikim, I probably can't say all, but I'm willing to bet the majority are Samach on the Erev. One second. And the head of the Mizrahi told me, Dr. Danny Lamb, same way spelled as Norman Lamb, the head of the Mizrahi told me that he brought down Reb Shimon Eider afterwards to check what had happened. And Reb Shimon Eider gave the okay. And of course, once you have Reb Shimon Eider, you don't have to go further. The Erev was 100% accepted. Now, I just want to quote one more thing, Yitzchak. Very fascinating and very important. Sam, long before you were born, a young guy named Ani Rothkopf went into the rabbinate. His first year, he was rabbi in Lower Merion, Ballykinwood, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, not far from where Rafi Berger was raised. His father's rabbi in North Philly. Right or wrong? I lasted 1 year in that rabbinate, and the next year I went to Maplewood, South Orange, built the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County, was there. To the morning, I was driven to the boat by the former treasurer or secretary of my sisterhood, and we sailed for Israel. Wonderful lady. It's all history today. I write about it in Washington, although I don't give names. You'll see when you read it why I don't give names. It's about my lady who went to jail. So, in that community, I was introduced to a very powerful, lively rabbinate, the Greater Newark Rabbinate. Maplewood was across the street from Newark, was the first suburb. And it was quite a rabbinate, the Chabotnikim and old Yudapayish Rabbanim. Very few YU Rabbanim at that time. And there was one rabbi, I don't want to mention his name, no longer alive, obviously. And he had been a Chabotnik. And then he gave up Chabad. He just plain Orthodox. And Rav Shalom Ber Gordon, who was a very famous Chabadnik, the son of Rav Yochanan Gordon, who's buried right next to the Rebbe, right near the Rebbe, said to me, when a person gives up Chabad, they give up a lot more. So this guy was giving a heksher. That heksher today is under the OU. It's a very famous heksher, but then it was in his hands. Small. It was a small operation. No one would dream that that type of frozen soup would become all over the United States and Canada and who knows where else today. But this is the early 60s. And at this meeting of the rabbis, he was asked, Rabbi so-and-so, would you eat from your heksher? And he said, no. Pandemonium broke out. Now you think about that. Those of you that are going to go into the American rabbinate, or the Israeli rabbinate for that matter, and you get involved with Hashgacha, I never want to hear that you don't eat from your Hashgacha. Because if you don't eat from your Hashgacha, Ribbono Shel Olam, that's a sign that something phony, illicit, is going on. So, Herbie, you're wondering why I told that story? Very simple. In a second email from Yitzchok, just another note on the Erev in Melbourne. Oh, he doesn't want me to say it in his name, so all I want to say, I'll summarize it, that Rabbi Levin, after he rebuilt the Erev, was approached and asked, Are you samach on your own Erev today? You're a Chabadnik, the Rebbe, all that goes with it. So he said, he doesn't carry anything in public like a book, but he always has a handkerchief in his pocket. He wants people to know he built the Erev, he feels responsible for it. And he doesn't, chas v'chalila, want people to look at him and say, hey, you're not carrying. Right away, the word will go out, there's an Yerur on the kashrut of the Erev. So that's so important. And be avrit meduberet, ani matztia, l'Rav Levin, Feitel Levin. I met him, I was impressed with him then, I'm impressed with him now. Now, regarding this essay that I quoted from, the author, in addition, Rabbi Krasniatsky is also a Chabad rabbi in Melbourne, the author. His brothers are shluchim in Hawaii and UES. What's UES? I don't know what that is. UES. What is it?
Upper East Side.
Upper East Side? Could be.
Well, I think that might be.
Yeah, UES, that's a new term for me. Makes sense. There is a Chabad in the Upper East Side. His sister is married to Avraham Fried. Okay? He also told me regarding Rabbi Bogomilsky in Maplewood, what I write about in Washington, where I come to his house on Shabbos morning, and he's eating and feasting before davening, a cup of coffee, blueberry cake, a cup of a coffee, apple pie, cherry pie. So I say to him, how can you eat? I give my look at him. He says, the difference between the Litvakim like you and us is you daven to eat. We eat to daven. So Yitz Gold showed me a source. I think it happened in my books for tomorrow. For tomorrow's lecture, showed me a source that it was one of the earlier Rebbeim. It may have been the Rashab or his daughter was rushing through davening so she could eat. She felt weak, and he told her, eat to daven. Don't daven to eat. So that what the Rav Shmuel Pesach told me has a source from Rebbeim ago, if I can put it that way. Yes, Yitzchak.
The same way as you were telling us that there are people that know how many candles were lit in the Dove's house.
Yeah, well, hold on one just fucking Dove, keep track now. I want a minion for daven now. Okay, don't let anyone, when we hit 10, no one else allowed out, even if their wives are waiting. We're davening to hey, it's bad. We're davening to eat, that means, okay, we'll daven to eat, let it be that way. Yes, it's fine.
Okay, so in the same way as people know what's going on in the house of the Rebbe, guaranteed that if the Rosh Kollel of a Chabad Kollel in Melbourne put together the Erev, the Rebbe knew about it within a few hours. So now I have the following question, which makes the whole point. And that is, did the Rebbe condemn him? No.
So I have to tell you, first of all, we're talking where the Rebbe was no longer alive. That's number one. Oh. Number two, your very question we're going to get to. I don't know if we're going to get to it today. We're going to get to it next week. So just relax. Savlanut.
But there was no condemnation from the...
Savlanut. You're raising a very... He's raising a very simple problem. If I'm a Chabadnik, how could I be involved in a scheme of putting up a Erev in public? Right?
That was not my question.
That the Rebbe condemns.
He didn't condemn. No, I'm saying that the Rebbe did not. You say he was already dead.
He was dead. So your question.
But whoever was there.
Let me take.
Nobody condemned him.
Right. So let me take your question. Put it in contemporary times. This is your question. That I have to go to 770 and I have to say, who here's involved with Australia? You guys are sinners. You have an Erev. It's against your tradition.
Well,
in Brooklyn, what? An Erev in Kfar Chabad, but there may be an Erev in 770 as well.
No, there's no.
I don't know.
It's just a communal
There are rumors that they put up an Erev in secret in Brooklyn. But Kfar Chabad has an Erev, no Shiloh about that. Melbourne has an Erev. Sydney, I believe, has an Erev. If I recall correctly, absolutely, it has an Erev. I remember distinctly. So you're asking a good question, but you'll see. The force of life is stronger, but the Erev Chabadnik has to deal with it. You'll see, you'll see. Okay, now, let me handle, Sam, where you come from. It comes right in. This Rabbi Krasinovsky, if I'm pronouncing it right, I wish they would advertise their names and have mercy on us. When his sister got married, Chabadnikim have a minhag, Chabadim hu alamdanim have a minhag. When they make a wedding, they give out a kuntris of Divrei Torah. By the way, Sam, pass the sheet to Yitzchak and to Herbie. Sign your email so if it ever should happen again that I have to cancel a class, we'll have a system where everyone can be reached. I don't have to worry about it. So they have a minhag. They give out a kuntris. I want to thank my Talmud Rabbi Aryeh Liebman, I believe, sent me this kuntris. And this is a follow-up to what was printed originally in Melbourne, and this too is in English, except this was published years later when his sister got married, 5766, so that would be 2006, if I'm not mistaken. Sister got married 2006. He publishes a whole kuntris on a community area with all the lambda nut that we quoted before, we quoted the last 2 years, and at the end, he comes halacha l'masa. And here too, he deals with the traditions that many of the poskim, and he quotes, for instance, the Avnei Nezer, and we quoted the Aruch HaShulchan, and many of the poskim agree that at times it's hard to understand how you can be so makil with Erev, but since people carry on Shabbos, we have to do everything we can, letzarev shitat, letzarev snifim, as we would say in halakhic language, and to build an Erev. And he quotes those that are opposed to the Erev, Reb Moshe Feinstein, and Reb Moshe feared the presence of an Erev would diminish the important concept of carrying in the minds of people to the extent that they might be unaware of its implications. Then he quotes Rabbi Silva, quoting Rabbi Soloveitchik, exactly what we quoted to you before. And this is a very delicate question. Can you have an Erev? Can't you have an Erev? What will happen to Shabbos if you have an Erev? And then there's another opinion. You take Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who we quoted a year and a half ago, the Rav of Yerushalayim, Rav Tzvi Pesach, and I checked with his family. What I'm quoting is absolutely correct. I actually davened mincha on Shabbos many times with his grandson. His grandson is married to my Talmidah. From the 70s, Rabbi, her father was a Chaver Knesset, Avraham Vertiger, Rabbi Vertiger, Chaver Knesset. This is his daughter, married to Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank's grandson, a fine Talmud Chacham. And Rabbi Tzvi Pesach said that when we paskin a halacha, we have to deal with halacha per se. We can't allow all these side issues to influence us. And if we can build an Erev, we can build an Erev, and we don't have to be concerned with fears. Children will forget about the Erev. No one will know about the Erev. No one will know that you can't carry. All these questions can interfere. The Devar Hashem Zu Halacha. So he gives this whole kuntris, and he balances it out. He shows the pro and the con. And here we get involved with London. And where you get involved with London, London already in the 1980s, once again, people are traveling, people are going to Israel. wherever Jews from Britain go, people are going to the United States, people are going to Canada, wherever the London people wind up, there is an Erev. You travel throughout the British Empire, be it Australia, be it South Africa, wherever you go, there is an Erev. Why can't London have an Erev? And it was a tremendous debate, and the Jewish Chronicle got involved, and London is not a monolithic community. You have the United Synagogue, you have the Federation, you have Kedashia, and the Machloket was loud and clear. And many of the Rabbanim there, Rabbi Chenoch Padwas, principal rabbinic authority of the Union of Orthodox Hebrew Congregations, the Adas, has issued a public notice in which he describes the moves to set up an Erev as a violation of the sanctity of the Sabbath. The situation in London today, he said, could not be compared with that in earlier times and in other congregations. He had discussed the matter with other leading rabbis, and they are in total agreement with my view. He called on those campaigning for an Erev to desist immediately. Asked for his reaction to Rabbi Padua's statement, the Sasava Rebbe, Rabbi Esti Rubin, told the Jewish Chronicle this week that the decision had not been taken lightly. An Erev will be of great help to everyone to whom the Sabbath is holy and part of their life. At the same time, it is our duty to keep the Sabbath holy. After lengthy and careful consideration of all aspects regarding the halakha and sanctity of the Sabbath, the rabbis, guided by Rabbi Padua, decided that an Erev in London is impossible. It is understandable that it would make life more comfortable on the Sabbath, especially for mothers with small children, the elderly, and the infirm. However, in the life of a believing Jew, religion takes priority over ease and comfort. Those rabbis opposed to the scheme are as profoundly concerned with Shmirat Shabbat and as deeply imbued with Avat Yisrael as anyone else. The Sabbath is the life and soul of the Jewish people, thanks to the fact that our forefathers gave their lives for the sanctity of the Sabbath. We are still a Jewish people after 2,000 years dispersed all over the world. The Sabbath is the foundation of the Jewish home. Without a foundation, or even with a faulty foundation, the home cannot stand. Those who had the eternity of the Jewish people at heart should endeavor to ensure that they and their children keep the Sabbath holy. So here you see from London, the Sasava Rebbe, the Rabbi Padua, these are famous names from the London rabbinate at that time, 100% opposed to an Erev. And the reasons are simple. The Erev may break. People will not know that carrying is forbidden. And look how firmly and how strongly, and today, of course, even in London, you have an Erev. So you see the rhythm of life, the halachic heartbeat, ultimately, you can't stop it. You want to be machmir? That's an individual decision. But the community has to be in consonance with what was before. And an Erev is part and parcel of our tradition. So,
my father was a good Calvinist.
A good Calvinist, you call him? The Lubavitcher Rebbe felt very similar. Rabbi Soloveitchik felt very similar. The Rav, Jeffrey Silver's quoting him correctly, felt very similar. But let me just go one step further and end off. You can't progress. Here it is. This is a release, February 2nd, 2014. I pulled this out of the computer, or it was sent to me. Forget about the date, March 6th, that's advertising a future event. And here's a beautiful article with only the publicity that Chabad can do. Shluchim purchase Erev rights. And here you see the borough president of Brooklyn, an Afro-American, not wearing a black hat, not wearing a beard. Everyone else, the two other Chabadnikim, or three in the picture, two black hats, beards, Chabadnik, big black kippah, the third one. At a meeting with Brooklyn's new borough president, Eric Adams, Shluchim halachically purchase the rights to keep an Erev. You know what that means. What does it mean, purchase? You have to purchase the rights from the city. We dealt with that to stop the problem with Mechallelei Shabbos, to stop the problem with non-Jews. Halachically purchased on behalf of the residents of Brooklyn the rights to have the existing Eruv to enable Jewish residents in certain communities to carry in the public domain in a halachically allowed manner on Shabbos. And here you have the borough president with the shluchim. And if that isn't enough, if you still don't believe it, here you have $1 bill. Am I right? That's a single dollar bill. Lincoln, what bill is Lincoln on? Is that Lincoln?
$5.
Here you have, thank you. Here you have a $5 bill transferring hands. And of course, this raises the tremendous question that Rabbi Reuben raised. These are Chabadnikim. This is the Rebbe's viewpoint. Rakef is not making it up. He read a letter to you. In the Rebbe, it's the Rebbe, everything the Rebbe wrote, you got to understand what a secretariat the man had. What organization. Thousands upon thousands of letters are being published, will be published. There's no end to what's come out. Every letter the Rebbe received, every letter the Rebbe wrote. No? Here, Chabadnikim, building an Erev Chatzerot, taking, renting, doing, etc. Okay? Yitzchak asked a beautiful question. And here I learned from the new world in which you live in so masterfully, in which I'm just a tyro or a freshman, and I'm very moved. I have students. By the way, let it be said that the gratitude that students show is very moving to me. I've gotten some gifts lately, and you have to know how to accept the gift with graciousness, and I can understand what it means when you go to a Rebbe and you give a kvittel, you give a pidgin, you understand? All right. So I mentioned the gift because one of them was a beautiful new computer, a gift from a grateful Talmud, and it makes me a grateful Rebbe, and even more grateful because my wife is grateful. So it's a double header. So one thing I learned from the computer, what's very interesting are the comments that people blog in. Some of them are absolute idiots. Some of them are halfwits. Some of them specialize in cursing and maledicting and using. It's amazing how in the computer there isn't an automatic censorship. Why do I have to see terrible language blogged into some article? But some of the comments are unbelievably insightful. And you see human beings struggling with reality. And on this particular article, Shluchim purchase a writes, it is unbelievable when you go through the comments. I could give a shayurim of half a year on the comments alone, but I'll just limit myself to a few thoughts next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. And then, instead of wearing an Australian hat, someone has to bring me a German hat from Tehillat Hagat Yishurim. I think when they take the Torah out, anyone that's on it has to put on a Stetson, a Hamburg, whatever they call it. Unfortunately, it's not Kedesha Yasef for me. My dear students, what do we do today? All right, today was a fascinating shiur. It's life, it's Torah, Australia, the Rebbe. Put it up secretly. You'll see the comments. It's unbelievable. And we went into Rabbi Levine and what one individual did. And see, this shows responsibility. You're not going to eat from your heksha? So what are you giving a heksha for? Where's the Yirat Shemayim? If you have that attitude, yeah, you can take the attitude. Well, better they should eat shchutot than eilut and treifot. But all right, what type of shchita is second best? The malicha is second best. If you have that attitude, we're finished. I'll say this about the OU. They have never had a scandal with their standards. In all their history, there were two scandals, both with Jews, not with Goyim. Never had a scandal with Goyim. Always were able to maintain the finest standards and top cooperation. Two Jews, one, two tragedies. One in riches, the vice president, he dropped dead under the chuppah. He was, they were going to, you know, he was facing charges. Forget about monetary, he would have gone to jail. And under his married, under the chuppah, his daughter's chuppah. If there ever was divine retribution, that was it. Under the chuppah, he dropped dead. It's unbelievable. And the other case was Chicago, something you should, well, it's not ancient history, Chicago, with the dress poultry, where you had a Jewish owner who had one treif place and one kosher, and the OU didn't know he had the treif place. I mean, that's unbelievable. He kept it a secret. And a non-Jewish teenage kid came to the rabbi, Erev Yom Kippur, said, "Rabbi, I want to confess something to you. My conscience bothers me. I transfer cottons from one place to another in the middle of the night." Why in the middle of the night? If it's legitimate, it can be by broad daylight. And of course, it turned out they were transferring treif to the kosher plant in the middle of the night. Outside of that, but this is responsibility. Then finally, a few words about England and that old problem of people will forget, people will not know. But Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Ein Gozrin Gezeirot Bizman Chazeh, and that ultimately carries the day, because the heartbeat of the Jewish people is a Torah heartbeat. And ultimately, Fuk Chazim Mayamad Dava, Im Lo Neviyim Heim, B'nei Neviyim Heim. Now, first of all, if anyone wants, this is to me, I cannot tell you what this represents to me, Gilui Eliyahu, wow. If anyone wants, these pictures are suitable for framing. There is the Chafetz Chaim, Bichvodo V'Atzmo. If anyone would have told me we would have something like this, I wouldn't believe it. Give this to Yitz Rubin. Okay, 1 second. Yitzchak, this is the article, and that's Rav Asher Weiss. Those of you, I have two copies of this. Very interesting. If you remember my friend Rabbi Bernhardt from South Africa, his daughter tells the story about her letter to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe, she meets the Rebbe years later, and the Rebbe says, "Weren't you angry about the letter?" What a memory he had. She was a little girl.
I brought this in for if somebody wants it.
What did you bring in? 1 second. Let me look at it. I'll pass it on tomorrow. Good, give me contact. I haven't seen it. And we'll pass it on. Here is on the Biyana Rebbe, who we've spoken about. Very interesting. And here's the present Biyana Rebbe, who took a picture with this kid and he never takes pictures, but the kid said, if the Rebbe will take a picture with me, I will not be Mochalu Shabbos ever again. And the Rebbe took a picture
with him. The obituary of Rabbi Teitz and Pinchas Mordechai.
Yeah. What about the obituary?
You were arguing of what his name was, Pinchas Mordechai or Mordechai Pinchas?
Right.
It's a Pinchas Mordechai, his obituary.
What did I say? Pinchas Mordechai.
I don't remember who
said yeah, no, I think I said so. I was right. Herbie, what did you say? No, it's Pinchas Mordechai.
No, it's not.
The obituary in the New York Times said Pinchas Mordechai.
All right, so I'll tell you, let us stop. And, okay. Tomorrow morning, 9:05, I wouldn't miss the class for all the bullets that Nathaniel did not hold in his hands these last few months. Until we meet again in health and happiness, that's for Danya. Moshe, Vahu Rachum, Sidurim are over here. Give out Sidurim, Vahu Rachum. Baruch Hashem.